Welcome to this week's Extra Innings podcast here at the Seattle Times. I'm Mariners beat writer Ryan Divish. I'm coming to you semi-live from Havre, Montana. Yes, that's my hometown. The population of about 9,000. Hey, we got a McDonald's. We got about 7 stoplights. You know, you can only drive 25 miles per hour in town. But I came back home for the holidays, for Christmas anyways. And then, you know, because I really wanted to experience the joy that is Montana in the wintertime. You'll hear me complain about it later with Larry. But it's, I think it's about, let me look real quick now. It's Friday afternoon. I'm taping this. We were going to try and tape the podcast a little earlier, but Larry couldn't do it. So right now it's 11 degrees. But with the wind chill of 8 miles an hour, or with the wind blowing 8 miles an hour, it feels like -1. It's supposed to get down to below zero. So it's going to be nice and warm and balmy here. This week's podcast, as we mentioned last week, was about the Hall of Fame. I did my Hall of Fame ballot, my very first one. I've written something that's going on our site. This podcast will accompany it. From a personal standpoint, it was harder than I thought. Obviously, some of the names are easy. Like, look, I've written so much and studied Edgar Martinez's case so much, you know, because of this process, that I have an understanding of why I believe he's a Hall of Famer. So he was easy to put in. Jim Thome, Chipper Jones, as Larry and I will discuss, I felt was easy. But when I got down to about names 8 or 9 and 10, and I'm always probably going to put 10 names on my ballot. I always feel like that's what you should do. Some people don't. One guy put one name, whatever. When I got down to 9 or 10, it got a little more difficult, and it's just not easy. You're analyzing. I mean, I think I wore out Baseball Reference and all the stuff that Jay Jaffe had written on Sports Illustrated. I went back and read several times. You know, you have an idea going into this, who you're going to vote for, because each year, you know, that I haven't been eligible, I still kind of put together my ballot in my head of who I would have voted for. So I had an idea coming into this, but at the same time, when it gets in front of you and you're having to do this and you have to put your name next to it and you know you're just going to get drilled on social media, you do want to put some time into this. And for me, and I don't know about anybody else, but I've been waiting for this, and I'm not going to take it for granted by any means that I got this. Now, to be eligible, you just have to be 10 years in the BBWA, 10 consecutive years as a BBWA member. I got my card in 2008. That was my first full season covering the beat where I had to travel. I'd covered the Mariners at the end of 2006 and 2007 as a backup. So 2008, I got my membership, and then I made it 10 straight years of unemployment at a newspaper, first at the News Tribune and now at the Times, which might be more of a miracle and an accomplishment than actually getting the vote itself, given how my temper tantrums, my propensity to be mean to people on social media and things like that. But I was pretty excited. I'm looking at the ballot now. I'm getting ready to send it in by snail mail in a little bit. I hope you read what I wrote, because, you know, I talked just a little bit about some of my beliefs when it comes to this, and why I voted for each candidate. Obviously, I'm not going to do this every year, but this being my first one, they felt like I should write something, because it is something that's different, and it's something that, you know, you do look forward to and you do want to do well. I don't ever want to be associated as one of those guys that just doesn't give a crap about it, or, you know, or doesn't put any thought into it. This is important. This is for one of the highest honors in baseball, and you know, I'm putting my name next to it, so I care. You know, I'm not going to, same with when I vote for MVP or Cy Young or whatever, or even just when I write a story. I mean, if your name's going next to it, you have to have some level of personal pride here. So I hope you enjoy this week's podcast. Like I said, Larry and I discuss our ballots. And we do discuss a little bit of the news of the day with the Mariners, which there is no news really, other than Juan Nicasio signing his contract officially, 2-year deal. I think it's $17 million, $17.5 million. I can't remember off the top of my head. It does not look like the Mariners are going to sign a starting pitcher of note. I think they will sign one, as Larry and I discussed quickly, but I don't know that it's going to be what everybody's clamoring for. And that's just kind of how it's been. I don't expect any major moves in the coming weeks. Jerry DePoto is spending some time with his family away. So I you know, obviously he's still working at all times, but I don't think we're going to see a major movement, partially because I think we haven't seen Darvish, Arrieta, and all these other big pitchers and Lorenzo Cain, that the free agent market is being held up because those other guys haven't signed yet. And some of the lower level guys, you know, those guys kind of are played off of what these other guys do. There's a run on it. So maybe in the next week or two we'll see something, but I would expect maybe more by the first week of January we see a lot more movement from the free agent market. I do think the Mariners will get a pitcher. I just don't think it'll probably be anybody that you guys are excited about. All right, so let's get to Larry Stone and we'll start the podcast. All right, let's welcome in Larry Stone. Where are you at, Larry?
I am at home in Bellevue, Washington.
Scenic Bellevue.
Bellevue.
The palatial estate of the Stone family.
That's right. I'm actually off this week, but for you, I will come out of vacation and do a podcast.
You were writing today. Don't lie about it. You wrote today,
that's true.
Too. Okay.
That's right.
It's one thing about our jobs is when you're off, you're kind of off. I mean, unless you're like really gone, and even, you know, I'm in Montana doing this stuff, so you're never truly off.
No, you're not. You're right. And when news breaks on your beat or whatever, if it's big news, you got to do it.
Quickly, any Dick Enberg memories you want to share?
Well, yeah, you know, I grew up in Southern California, and he was one of the voices of my generation, my youth in Southern California. It was an incredible array of broadcasters. He had Vin Scully on the Dodgers, Enberg on the Rams and the Angels, and Chick Hearn on the Lakers. There was a Hall of Famer on the LA Kings named Bob Miller. So I mean, there's just Hall of Fame announcers everywhere, and you know, I loved listening to Dick Enberg. Got to meet him later in life. I talked to him for a Dave Niehaus feature I did about 10 years ago, and he was very gracious. You remember the show Sports Challenge? It was a sports quiz show. I used to love that when I was a kid. He was the host of that.
No, Larry, let's remember our age difference here.
That's true. But I think he has one of the most instantly recognizable voices, and just you know, did all the major events and particularly the Angels for me. That was the, you know, I listened to all their games along with the Dodger games when I could, and loved his announcing.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I remember him from NBC Football with Merlin Olsen and Bob Trumpy, I think, is who he used to do that with. And I also remember him from some of the Olympics and some of the tennis coverage. And then, you know, he was doing the Padres for the last few years. So you'd see him around, obviously, with the bitter rivalry that is the Vetter Cup, that obviously Dick Enberg had no concept of who Eddie Vetter was or the Vetter Cup. But he always seemed really friendly. You know, you'd see him in the press box and things like that. So, you know, his attachment to the Mariners with Dave Niehaus is relatively important.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, Enberg's trademark call was, oh my, when something good happened, he'd go, oh my. And I think Dave kind of incorporated that with his my, oh my. They were partners for many years. Dave was the second guy in the Angels booth. And, you know, he wanted to be, I think he wanted to be the lead broadcaster. And that's why he left in 77 to become the Mariners guy when they had expansion. But, those two had a very, very close kinship. One other thing about Dick Enberg we got to mention was his cameo role in one of my favorite movies of all time,
The Naked Gun. Yes,
yeah, with the five person broadcast booth with Jim Palmer, Mel Allen, Dick Vitale,
Kurt Gowdy.
Kurt Gowdy might have been six person booth. Yeah. Enberg, and then of course Dr. Joyce Brothers.
Yes, that was always great. Hey, I mean, it's not every day you get a call Frank Drebin acting as Enrico Palazzo as the umpire, as the anthem singer, and then as the umpire as well.
Yeah, yeah. That baseball scene is. I still watch that about once every 6 months, just because I love it so much. I'll pull out the old. the old tape, and
oh my god,
watch it old school.
My favorite part in that in the baseball scenes, not the, you know, when the long strike call where he does like the moonwalk down the bases, yeah. But no, my favorite is when they hit the pop up to the catcher and Leslie Nielsen grabs like six baseballs and throws them up in the air to go with the other guy. That's probably my favorite part about that.
I like the when they show the blooper reel and the guy's arm falls off when he goes back to catch the fly ball.
Emberg's face.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Very exactly. Underrated movie. That's you know, those Naked Gun movies are one of my favorites. It's just not often either you see Reggie Jackson trying to kill the Queen of England.
Yeah, you know, I read once that once they were going to do more of them, but once the OJ thing happened, that was the end of it, because OJ had a pretty prominent role.
As Nordberg, Lieutenant Nordberg.
Nordberg, yeah. Nordberg, yeah.
He was always hurt, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. We had to go through that. But, I guess we'll go to a little bit of the news, or lack thereof, with the Mariners. First of all, Jake Arrieta, that I know of, was not meeting with Jerry DePoto because Jerry DePoto is not in Seattle. Jake Arrieta was in Seattle because many people sent me the Instagram that his wife took of pictures there where they seem to be visiting the Space Needle and, I don't know, it looked like the EMP and some of the other stuff. But I don't think they're going to sign Jake Arrieta. I don't know what you think, but I don't think that everything – and every indication that I've gotten when we were sitting there talking with Jerry DePoto – down at the winter meetings, talking with sources, they're not signing Jake Arrieta.
No, yeah, I hadn't heard. I've been kind of off the internet for a while, so I hadn't seen this link to him being in Seattle, so that's news to me. But, yeah, I would be stunned. You're right. I mean, all indications are that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of laid low and maybe tried to get a bargain sign, somebody whose value dropped, whose asking price dropped and got a little desperate in late January or early February or something like that. But, you know, Arrieta is not going to fall into that category. He's going to be a big ticket item. And unless Jerry is doing a stealth move here and being coy, I just don't see it.
And that's usually not his MO by any means. He kind of just tells you what he's going to do. I don't think there's any secrets about it, but at least from what I've noticed, he says, look, we want to get a pitcher. He went out and got Juan Nicasio. I mean, he hasn't said – last year he said he needed to get a starting pitcher. He traded for Drew Smiley. Didn't work out so well, but that's what he did.
Yeah, he's transparent. I mean, when I talked to him at the winter meetings, he even said that. He says, I like – you know, telling you what we're gonna do. I mean, he didn't put it in so many that those exact words, but he doesn't believe in misleading. And you know, if somebody drops in their lap, that's not misleading. But I think that was his intention, was to not go get somebody. But you know, I mean, I think Arrieta would be great for this team. Don't get me wrong, but. I don't see any indication that that's going to happen.
I mean, it's perplexing. It's fans believe they should sign a starting pitcher, another one, a relatively named starting pitcher. You and I have talked about it endlessly, about our belief that their rotation is not what we consider commensurate with the rest of the league. I'm not saying the Angels have a great rotation by any means. I don't think theirs is very good. I think the Mariners actually have a better bullpen than the Angels. But I still think if they want to really ensure themselves of fighting for that second wild card spot or even the first wild card spot, that adding to their starting pitching would be ideal or necessary for that matter.
Yeah. I mean, if you dropped, you know, Mike Leake became a number four starter or something like that, and Erasmo's your number five behind Paxton, let's say Felix, and the new addition, the unnamed, probably non-existent addition, then that's a, you know, that's a rotation you could go to war with, you know, go to the season with. But right now, you're going to have a Roswell number four, and then a cast of who knows what for number five, Marco Gonzalez and Andrew Moore and those type guys battling it out. You know, then it's a little more problematic.
I mean, I guess they could also try and, you know, go for the first month or two and then maybe add a pitcher at the deadline, but you know, that's assuming you could stay in it for that long to then add a pitcher to be a difference maker. I don't know. I know pitching is hard to come by for trades. Free agency is different. I mean, it's a dollars thing, and I know they've got a lot of dollars committed, but it just, and I do think they'll sign a starting pitcher. I just don't think it'll be, you know, Alex Cobb or Yu Darvish or Arrieta or even Lance Lynn. I think it'll be kind of a lesser guy, you know, the Trevor Cahill types maybe, but it
Yes,
seems.
Dan Straley, somebody like
Yeah,
that.
I mean, Dan Straley they'd have to trade for, but who else? Jesse
Yeah.
Chavez, somebody like that. I don't think it's going to be a named guy, and that's kind of how they're
Yeah.
going to go into the season. I mean, Jerry, you know, I think he gets tired of me always bringing it up because I brought it up in our last interview with him. You know, again, I've never said we needed starting pitching. I said, no, I keep saying it.
Yeah. I think if he says it enough times,
Maybe I'll believe it.
maybe you'll believe it, and everyone else will. But until then, I'm as skeptical as you. And you know, here it comes back again to their lack of prospects. You know, you have guys out there like Chris Archer and Gerrit Cole, and you know, there's some really pretty good pitchers that may be on the market. And yet the Mariners can't even get into that game because they can't come close to having what it takes to get a pitcher like that because their farm system is so dried up of top-notch prospects.
Yeah, it'd be like me and you trying to get into like one of those fancy Vegas clubs. They're not even letting us in the door.
Exactly. Well, you maybe,
I don't
not
know.
me.
Not that I really want to go to one of those clubs, but no. Yeah, so that's kind of where they're at. I do, like I said, I do think because of the way the market is, and I'm sure you find this weird that none of those guys, there's been no free agents that really, the bigger ones that have signed. It's all been a bunch of middle relievers. I mean, Lorenzo Cain's sitting out there. I mean, he really is hurt by the qualifying offer, and everybody thought with the new CBA that the qualifying offer wouldn't be as punitive, but teams are still shying away from that, especially teams that are near the luxury tax or over it, where they lose the first and the third, I think it is. They're not going to mess around with it. So Lorenzo Cain sitting out through, I think, is a pretty damn good player. You got all the pitchers still out there. Eric Hosmer is still out there. I mean, the bigger free agents are sitting out there waiting to get signed. I wonder when this is all going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, nothing will happen probably till there's this holiday hiatus. You know, nothing will, you know, sometimes things happen, but my guess is that nothing will happen till after the first of the year. And then, you know, players start to get antsy. It's spring training is, you know, about a month away at that point, and you want to know where you're going. So I think a lot of teams sort of prey upon that and try to get players who might. Just to get some finality and some certainty in their lives will take a little less than they had anticipated. And with so many out there, I mean, you look at the first base market, there's like eight first basemen out there, and there aren't eight first base jobs. So, you know, guys, this is some Duda and Lomo and Hosmer and, you know, there's Napoli, there's other, as you saw the list of it, it goes on and on. And I mean, some of those guys might just say, get me, you know, I don't want to be the odd man out here. So I think there's going to be some of that that happens. But there's also a lot of, you know, premier guys who still haven't signed. So that'll be interesting.
I haven't listened to this week's episode of Jerry's Wheelhouse. Actually, I haven't listened to like the last few, so maybe he's talked about this stuff. I don't know. I'm protesting the wheelhouse right now unless I absolutely have to listen to it. It's extra
Well,
work.
I shouldn't even say this because we're doing a podcast, but I'm not a podcast
No,
person.
you don't know how to even download.
I like to read. I'm a reader. You know, I wish if a podcast, if somebody could transcribe it, I'd love it. But who has the time?
That's like an
God,
audiobook story.
this is a real advertisement here for our podcast, but this is a generational thing. I'm not in the podcast generation. I'm happy to do it and have other people listen to it, but never mind. I shouldn't have even opened my mouth.
Wow, that's, I can't, I don't even know how to edit it out, so we're just gonna have to stay. This is how bad we are.
I do have fun doing it though.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's get to our All-Star or to All-Star to all Hall of Fame ballots. All right. So Larry released his on Tuesday. I'm going to read mine out right now, and then I'm going to let Larry offer his criticism on my ballot because you'll see why. So I voted going in alphabetical order. Looking at my ballot that I have filled out and I'm getting ready to send it. Hey, do I have to put a stamp on that envelope or is that already
No,
pre-stamped?
it's pre-stamped. We're BBWAA is a first-class organization.
I don't.
It's funny though. Every time, somebody takes a picture of their ballot and puts it on Twitter, there's always people who say, "A paper ballot?" And just think it's hilarious that in 2017 we're still mailing in a paper ballot.
Yeah, and
And
we can't even, yeah, you have to mail it in. I think I wrote that in my piece. I'm writing a story or a column, I guess is what it was, just kind of explaining my ballot since it's my first one ever. But yeah, I mentioned that we're using snail mail, which is very fitting for a group of mostly middle-aged white males that are stuck in, the past.
Yeah, I don't know why we don't go to at least emailing in your ballots, but I think there's something sort of quaint about the fact that it's still done I mean, this is my 22nd or 23rd ballot, and it hasn't changed a bit. I mean, the format is exactly the same as it was in 1996 when I sent in my first one.
I can't remember my BBWA badge number. I'm a chapter chairman too, and I can't remember it, and I don't have it with me in Montana. So
Yeah, I had to get my card out and look at it. I certainly don't have it committed to memory. I'm number 84 now,
oh,
and
that means you're old.
which is old because you start out at your first year. You're at the it's done chronologically, so the newest members have the highest, and then as people die or retire, you move up in numbers. So I've moved up from like in the 500s to now number 84, which is very sobering.
Yeah, I think I'm in the 300s now. I was like at the 500s. I mean, the number of BBWA members has increased too because we added the MLB.com guys and some other guys, so that's helped me out a little bit.
One time I was in 1990, I was at the NLCS in Cincinnati, and there was a little party for the media, and I met a guy named Ritter Collette with a Dayton paper, and within like 30 seconds of our conversation, he told me that he was number one. He had the number one card of the
Wow.
Baseball Writers Association. It was like the proudest thing in his life. He was telling everybody this, but you don't want to be number one because that means you probably have a foot in the grave
Yeah, he didn't
if
keel
you
over in the middle of a party, did he?
if you he didn't last too much longer after that. But great journalist, great guy, but he was in his by that point he was in his early 80s, I think.
Okay, well, we'll go over my ballot. So, in alphabetical order, I have Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Vladimir Guerrero, Trevor Hoffman, Chipper Jones, Edgar Martinez, Mike Mussina, Curt Schilling, Jim Thome, and Larry Walker. What complaints do you have about my ballot, Larry?
I mean, that is an embarrassing, incompetent. Wait, oh wait, that's my ballot exactly too.
Yeah, I had about seven, I was looking on the tracker about seven other ballots as well, so I didn't feel
Yeah.
bad. We don't
Yeah,
share.
that's
Look, there was no collusion. There was no collusion between me and Larry. None. No collusion. I'm gonna actually hashtag that when I post that anyway.
Well, I mean, my ballot is the six holdovers from last year. So, I mean, there I'm and the year before and the year before and the year before seven holdovers. And there were three people who went in last year. So there's three new spots on the ballot, which are almost no-brainers for Tomei and Chipper Jones. And so that left one extra spot. So I added Larry Walker back. I had voted for Larry Walker his first 3 years on the ballot, and then because of the rule of 10, where you could only vote for 10, he got bumped off because there was a several crops of really good classes that sort of usurped him. But now, with three openings, he went back on my ballot. So, really, my ballot's the same ballot I've had all along for year after year. It's just that there were a couple openings this year for the two new guys and Larry Walker.
Well, I think obviously because you and I have discussed the ballot so much that you have some influence. I mean, that might be the only influence you have on me because otherwise, I'm like your the son you never wanted to have in terms of being ornery and stubborn and everything else.
Well, my son thinks you're the dad. Sometimes I think you're the dad that he wishes he had.
Yes.
I think he likes you almost as much as me. But that's because you don't have to like discipline them or anything like that. You just get to do the fun stuff.
Exactly. Well, I mean, but I think that's part of it, though, is like you and I talking about this, you know, and to be honest, we've always kind of thought similarly about the game in a lot of ways. So, and I don't know. I mean, let's go through it a little bit. On the newcomers, I mean, for me, Chipper Jones and Jim Thome were kind of no-brainers to vote in. You know, you look at their accomplishments. Chipper is one of the most productive third basemen of all time, and Jim Thome hit 600 and some home runs. I mean, that's usually, you know, just on counting stats alone on Jim Thome, that's pretty significant. Whereas Chipper, I mean, I because he's been around so long, I think people forget how truly great he was as a switch-hitting third baseman.
Yeah, I mean, both of those to be, I mean, there you can look at the polling on, you know, the site that does the polling. They're both well over 90%, almost 100%. So there's a lot of unanimity there on, I mean, they're two of those guys that's really hard to make a case against. You know, of the newcomers, there was a few other guys that I would have loved to have voted for and may vote for down the line. Scott Rowland is a guy that I think a lot of people don't realize how good he was. When you look at his WAR, I think it's in the 70s. Mm-hmm. You know, he's one of those kind of hidden great players that is a lot better the closer you look at him. You know, Andrew Jones, he was on a Hall of Fame trajectory, and then he just kind of fell flat at the second half of his career. Yeah, he got fat, and I mean, he went from being the best center fielder in the league to being kind of this plodding fat guy.
Swung for the power after that, like when he was at the Yankees and everything.
Exactly. Yeah, you look at his early numbers, he was headed for the Hall of Fame, but he's a not-quite guy. Omar Vizquel he's the most interesting guy on this ballot because people are so split on him. You know, most fans think he should be automatic, or many fans. The Sabre community thinks it's a joke. Any vote for him is an absolute joke. So somewhere in between the truth lies, you know, I'm going to give Omar strong consideration, and I may very well vote for him. That's one where I don't want to fall in with a crowd of, he's not that good. You know, I think he was a great defensive player who the defensive metrics may not do justice in his case.
Well, I don't think, and one thing is, I don't think, you know, with they don't have defensive metrics back then to measure how good of a defensive player he was. It's all based
exactly.
There's no metric to tell you that. You know, a product of his overall counting numbers, his total hits and stuff, his longevity for as long as he played. But he was also a viable player long enough to be able to play for that long. So I didn't vote for him. I think I wrote the same thing, that he's very polarizing. And there is no way that somebody that played as long as Omar did and have the success that he did have can sit there and say it's a joke one way or it's automatic the other. I mean, because there's no way I look at him and say, oh yeah, he's automatic, but there's no way I look at him and say, oh, it's a joke either. I mean, even if there were defensive metrics, the people that make these defensive metrics already admit that things like UZR and defensive run save are still flawed metrics. They're far from imperfect. So I don't know how they can sit there and make that justification right away, knowing that, you know, they don't have the one of the things that they usually fall back on.
Yeah, and I think Jay Jaffe had four or five different defensive metrics on Omar, and they had a huge range from really very good to just average. You know, I don't know how Omar Vizquel could come out as average on any defensive reckoning, but it does happen. I mean, he had 2,877 hits. He was 123 hits shy of 3,000, you know, which used to be an automatic benchmark for the Hall of Fame. I know there are no automatic benchmarks anymore, but you know, that's a lot of hits. And you know, his on-base percentage wasn't great, 336. His slugging percentage was very poor, 352. You know, I think a lot of people think he's sort of the Ozzie Smith of the next generation. Somewhat similar offensive numbers. I think Ozzie is regarded as an even better shortstop defensively than Omar. But, you know, Omar, I think in his time and by his peers, was regarded as the top defensive shortstop around in an era of a lot of good ones. So, you know, this wasn't the year for him just because of the ballot, but his, you know, the time will come when I'll give him much more serious consideration. And, you know, if it goes the way it's looking now with four guys and maybe five going in, there's going to be a lot of room on next year's ballot.
Yeah, very much so. And the one thing is, you know, it looks like Omar is going to get enough to meet the percentages to stay on the ballot, which is what, 10%? Is that what you have to have?
Ah, gosh.
I can't remember off
the top. No, it's 5%. 5%. I think it's only 5%, yeah.
So, that, I mean, then that would keep him on the ballot then. So, I mean, that's, you know, going back to Roland, we were talking about this a little bit, but, you know, if you look at Roland's numbers offensively, he has better offensive numbers than Brooks Robinson. Now, Brooks Robinson is considered one of the greatest defensive third basemen of all time. I mean, that's, you know, without argument. But Roland has got very good offensive numbers that are comparable. It's comparable to Ron Sano as well, who's in, but he was in the modern era, the kind of modern era voting. But he is, you know, and he at the time when Roland was playing, he was considered to be the best defensive third baseman in baseball, kind of like the way Beltre is right now.
Yeah, I mean, Santo was not voted in by the baseball writers. 15 years he voted, you know, much to his agony, and then he didn't make it the first three or four times with the Veterans Committee. It wasn't until he, you know, after his death, unfortunately, that he finally got in. It's going to be a tough road for Roland. I mean, he's not going to be. I think he'll be comfortably remaining on the ballot, but I don't think he's going to pass like 20%. So. But these things can, I mean, you know, there was a time when Edgar was in the 20s. See, the sentiments and shift, it's amazing how that happens, but it does. And, I mean, look at Edgar now. He's riding this incredible wave of momentum in the mid 80% range. It's gone from, I thought there was no chance he'd get in this year, that he had a good shot next year, to maybe he does have a shot this year the way it's going.
Yeah, it's weird that way. To get back to that, let's go into that real quick, because they were just posting some stuff today. I saw from Mr. Tibbs, Ryan Thibodeau. He was on like 20 straight ballots.
Right.
And from this morning, with 88 ballots revealed, Edgar is on 86% of them. That'll go up, obviously, with my ballot going in, or I'll send it to him today. But the one thing that kind of made me, you know, crook an eyebrow up a little bit on that, you know, Edgar is nice, and it's nice that he's at 86%, but Clemens is at 74% and Bonds is at 73%. And you know, there's a huge faction of voters that will never vote for those guys because they're related to the PED scandal.
Yeah, I don't think Edgar is going to fall into that. You might, we've talked about this before, but the people who send their votes in on Twitter and blog about it and all that, podcast about it, the ones who don't do any of that stuff are the votes that come in at the end, or, you know, maybe never become public. Mm-hmm. And those, I think, tend to be more conservative, older people who would hold a grudge about the steroids, might have an anti-DH stance. So, you know, it's almost like when you're counting an election, and, you know, all the Democratic counties were counted first, and one candidate's way ahead, but, you know, the Republican leaning counties still to come. So you have to have a big lead if you're going to hold on. Edgar's, I think, has got to be in the mid-80s. Going into the end to withstand probably a drop at the end that's inevitably going to come. So, but he's way, way above where he was last year at this time, and he ended up almost at 60%. So, you know, if it keeps trending in this direction, you know, I think it's looking to me like it's going to be like nip and tuck for him. Could go either way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's, you know, I kind of was always firm that it was going to be 69 to 70%, but maybe it gets even closer than that. I mean, to even get to that close, that would be a huge, huge lift in the idea that he would probably make it in his final year, because you would get the push of a guy being in the final year of his ballot. I mean, the Mariners themselves, they aren't lacking in putting stuff out there on social media, that's for certain. They have something every day.
Yeah, and I wonder how much the fact that people are looking at this not Mr. Tibbs counter, and they're seeing vote after vote for Edgar. If you haven't filled out your ballot yet, it might make you rethink that. It's like, wait, what am I missing here? I think that will benefit him. Sort of, you know, you can call it groupthink or whatever, but you know, I think that there is a certain momentum that comes with that builds on itself, and I think that's what's happening in a good way for Edgar right now.
Not to go on a rant, but you know what's not going to help Edgar in the voting process? The resolution by the representatives from Premier Jayapal and everything. We got that email last night, and I want nothing to do with this. I'm sorry, but that's like my biggest pet peeve is sports people or like politicians attaching themselves to like a sports thing that's trending right now, you know, and Edgar certainly is. And it's like, oh, yeah, let's jump on and do a resolution for Edgar. What does it mean? I don't know. It essentially means nothing, but it was a way for them to get their name out there, you know.
I doubt if that will sway one single vote, and hopefully it won't dissuade somebody from voting for it.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't. Yeah, I don't know if it's gonna. Well, they're not in my district, so that's my political rant for the day. I find it very disingenuous of any politician of either party to insert themselves into the sports debate just because it's a popular thing of the moment and it's trying to like show you, hey, I know stuff about sports. I'm a sport guy. Sport person.
Invariably, when they do that, they get it wrong.
Yeah, what was it? Mac McGuire and Sammy Sosa.
Yeah, Sammy Sosa. That was
Ted Kennedy.
Ted Kennedy, yeah. And that happens. That kind of stuff happens all the time. Oh, yeah. I think that does you far more damage than you know trying to latch on to a successful athlete does you good when you botch it, and it just shows that you're just bandwagon jumping.
Yeah, I'm not out there talking about zoning and plat distribution for different areas of Seattle. Stay in your lane.
Exactly.
All right. Let's see what else. Anything else on the? I mean, you know, I'm looking at these guys. We've talked about the PED guys before, and I talked with Jay Jaffe a little bit about it. It was kind of my thinking. This is like that whole era. It's hard to define who or who wasn't using because there's certainly. Could be players that are currently in now that may have used and that you don't know about. They never tested positive. And also, I think the biggest thing is once, you know, Bud Selig got voted in, he helped oversee that whole era when it was rampant. Now, he brought in the testing. Don't get me wrong. He brought in the testing, but for a long time, baseball turned a blind eye to it. And one of the main leaders of that is in the Hall of Fame. I certainly don't think that you can keep guys out because of that.
Yeah, you know, this is the fundamental decision you kind of have to make when you become a Hall of Fame voter or when these guys came on the ballot like 7 or 8 years ago. How are you going to come down on Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Alex Rodriguez, Rafael Palmeiro, Sammy Sosa, all these guys who have links to steroids one way or another? And, you know, the line I drew was, I never voted for Palmeiro or Manny because they were busted, tested positive or suspended, you know, after the testing went in place. And, you know, Manny Ramirez certainly is a Hall of Famer by any standard statistically that you can as is Palmeiro, you know, 3,000 Palmeiro's 3,500. 3,000 hits, 500 homers, which there's only like four people who have done that. But he barely lasted on the ballot because he tested positive. Manny was busted twice. But the other guys, I agree with, you know, I've certainly stated that many, many times, that all the things that you said. And there's more and more guys who are from this era, and a few of them are sneaking into the Hall of Fame, Piazza, Bagwell, about whom there were some suspicions. You know, as those guys get in, and it gets harder and harder to sort of think that somebody might be a steroids guy. Bonds and Clemens, I have little doubt that Bonds used steroids, but there's other guys that I have a lot of doubt about. So it's just hard to know for sure. And I mean, Bonds was the best player of that generation. I don't think it's right to keep him out of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, Clemens was the greatest right-handed pitcher of that generation, too.
Right. I mean, you're getting to the point where you can have a Hall of Fame without the best right-handed hitter pitcher, the best slugger. You know, Alex Rodriguez is probably not going to make it. You know, certainly one of the top five players of all time if you throw away, you know, all the baggage and stuff. Or maybe top 10 players of all time.
You need one of those garbage barges in Jersey to take away all of Alex's baggage, but yes.
Yeah, but if you look, talking about pure statistical accumulation, I mean, he was incredible.
Oh, yeah, no, he was, for whatever, and this is kind of like the Curt Schilling thing a little bit, is like he's a loathsome human being. He's a rampant self-promoter. He's, you know, borderline racist on some levels and some of the things he says, but you know, if you look at statistically some of the stuff he's done, that probably make you know, you're not supposed to vote just because the guy is kind of a jerk doesn't mean you really don't vote him for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, I mean, I hate his politics, but I just threw that, I just put that away and looked at his baseball case. To me, that's all that I mean, to be hypocritical to not vote for him just for that. And you know, if you look at him, he's another guy. Him and Mussina are both a lot better, I think, than a lot of people think. They kind of are two of a kind to me. You know, the day of the 300 win pitcher is just not there anymore. It's just not good. And so you can't use that as your standard, and you can't even use wins as your standard anymore. I mean, it's a new era.
Yeah, no. I mean, obviously, we've spent a lot of time. There's been a lot of discussion about how flawed the win statistic is, and so obviously you're not using that. But I don't. The way pitchers are used now, I can't imagine if there ever is going to be another 300 win pitcher. Is there?
I think there will be. I mean, you know, there'll be somebody that will come along like a Randy Johnson or a Nolan Ryan, who will be good into their 40s. I mean, CC Sabathia has 240 wins, I think, 230 wins. He's only 35 or 36. He's not going to get there, but let's say he was, you know, he had a late career revival. And, I mean, it's not out of the question that he could do it.
Yeah, he's, you know, 36. Mark, so the active wins leader right now, do you know who that is? He has 240.
It's not Sabathia?
No. Sabathia has 237.
The big man,
Bartolo
Colon. Yeah.
So Bartolo has 240 at age 44. Sabathia has 237 at age 36. And then the next most,
I mean, he's got to win. So he's got to win 63 games. You know, at 36, that's not out of the question. But I just my point
with that
is
run
I just
support
think,
he's going to get, that's possible.
Yeah, and he's certainly figured out a way to get weak contact. You know, he doesn't have the stuff. You know, he used to be a 100-mile-an-hour guy. Now he's a finesse junk baller, more or less. But he's figured out a way to get weak contact. And with that lineup, if he can throw up a, you know, couple of 18-win seasons, let's say, that'll put him at 36, and then he'll just probably hang around long enough to get it. Yeah, so I felt all along that it's not, that you can't say that will never happen again. I just think it'll be far fewer than it was.
The next, after Sabathia, the next most wins by an active pitcher is 188. Two pitchers have it. Any guesses?
188.
One's done it in 15 seasons. The other one's done it in 13 seasons.
Let's see. Cole Hamels hasn't been around that long, has he? I don't know. I'm just drawing a blank right now.
John Lackey and Mrs. Kate Upton have 188 wins each.
Yeah, Felix might have 188 if he didn't have all those 1-0 and 2-1 losses in his,
Zach
in his
Greinke,
career.
Then it goes Zach Greinke at 172. Felix Hernandez, 160. He's 226 all time. He's at 160. John Lester, 159.
Well, Felix is a classic example of why wins and losses shouldn't matter much, because he truly would have, how many more, 20, 30 more wins with offensive support during his heyday?
Yeah, I would agree. And it's pretty crazy. Yeah, so we're not going to use the wins, but I looked at Mussina and Schilling, and I thought it was a pretty good, you know, I thought they were of the pitchers, you know, that are out there, I would say that they're at least close to Hall of Fame. I mean, they're not, you know, automatics. Like, you look at them and say, oh yeah, they're definitely in. But when you look upon further inspection, you use things like WAR and all these other things, I think then that's when you kind of determine when they're getting in.
Yeah, and then you throw in the postseason, particularly Schilling.
Yes.
You know, extraordinary. You know, Mussina, I have the numbers right in front of me. He won 270 games, only lost 153. I think that's one of the best win-loss percentages around. And you know, 270 wins in his era is almost like is probably this lines up with 300 wins in the previous era.
Oh yeah,
So.
I would agree. It was easier for me to vote Mussina than it was Schilling, and it wasn't just because of like the personal, just mo the little more longevity. Although Schilling's got a ton of strikeouts too, he struck out a lot of guys.
He does, yeah. I mean, he's maybe top 10 all time. I'm not sure, but you know, a great strikeout ratio, strikeouts to walks ratio, and all that.
Yeah, and then I mean the other ones are pretty simple. You know, if you're gonna vote Mariano Rivera in next year, which he'll be on the, I think he's on the ballot next year, right?
Yeah, he'll be. Yeah, he has a shot to be the first unanimous guy.
Yeah.
I don't think there'll ever be one, but particularly now that we voted, or that the Hall of Fame decided against the best baseball writers' vote to not reveal the votes,
Yeah.
so there's no peer pressure on being known as the person who didn't vote for Ken Griffey Jr. or whatever. But yeah, I think you're going to talk about Trevor Hoffman, so I'll let you
Yeah, no. I
finish.
mean, just yeah. If Trevor Hoffman was the first pitcher to get 500 saves, he's the first pitcher to get 600 saves. And you know, he's second all time. I just think if you're gonna, in the era of closers and that being a viable position, similar to the DH, that it's just been around and how they use them. I mean, you have to reward somebody for that kind of longevity and success. You know, I didn't have a problem voting with them. I know some people are anti-closers and stuff, but this is how the game is played. You can't punish a pitcher because that's the role that he's used in. And you know, I mean, he had 14 seasons where he saved 30 or more games, and 9 seasons where he saved 40 or more. So I mean, that's pretty good for a bad team sometimes too.
Yeah, I mean, the guy that's really interesting that's on this ballot, and I got a lot of emails about how could you vote for Trevor Hoffman and not vote for this guy, is Billy Wagner, who Billy Wagner's stats in many ways, other than saves, are superior to
Oh,
Trevor Hoffman's.
yeah.
But he had 422 saves, so that's almost 200 fewer than Hoffman did. You know, the save is a flawed stat and all that, but 600 is an extraordinary number, 601 specifically for Hoffman. You know, Wagner is another, you know, once Hoffman goes in, Wagner, I think, will get a lot closer look, because it really is hard not to vote for Wagner if you vote for Hoffman. I mean, he had a better ERA, he had better strikeout numbers. You know, in a lot of ways, they were better across the boards, other than saves. His whip was better. You know, all that stuff, and their WAR was almost identical. So, you know, Wagner's one to, but you know, he's one of those classic guys where you just never considered him a Hall of Famer. Where you always considered Hoffman a Hall of Famer, but you didn't. You know, Scott Rolen, same way. That's something they have to overcome, is just sort of the eye test kind of thing and the perception kind of thing, and you have to maybe wrap your brain around the fact that he was better than you thought he was.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a little different. Like you said, it's weird. It goes in trends, and then thinking changes when information comes out. You know, the more stuff comes out, the information changes. People, you know, they get more progressive in their thinking, at least. You hope that it's, anyways.
Yeah, exactly. And Edgar's benefiting from that right now. There's been some campaigns on his behalf, people looking at things differently. You know, time changes the perception of the DH. You've got Ortiz. I think what helps him is you've got Ortiz, who's going to be on the ballot in 2 or 3 years, and everybody thinks Ortiz is a surefire Hall of Famer. And then you have people making the case that, you know, Edgar is better than Ortiz in almost everything except postseason numbers and total home runs. So if Ortiz is a slam dunk, it's hard. to not justify Edgar being a Hall of Famer as well.
Yeah, definitely. I'm trying to think who else. Who else is going to be on the ballot next year besides Rivera? Do you know off the top of your head?
Yeah, I just looked at it and I tweeted something about it. Todd Helton is going to be. He's like very similar to Larry Walker, who you and I both voted for. Mm-hmm. In that people are going to say, "Oh, he's a product of Coors Field." You know, I think Larry Walker was great before he got to Coors Field, mm-hmm. and was great away from Coors Field, and was a great defensive player. You know, I think Larry Walker is a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's got some. You know, just because he played in Coors Field doesn't mean you have to penalize him. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't reward him for him, but not penalize him. And I kind of looked at, you know, Edgar Martinez is a. He's a DH. He has that stereotype against him. I thought, again, hypocritical maybe to hold Coors Field against Larry Walker and to be an advocate for Edgar Martinez. Yeah. So you have Helton and Rivera, Andy Pettit is on. Yeah, and those are the main guys. There might be one other one, but I can't
see. I mean, Berkman. I'm looking at Berkman and Michael Young, but I don't, you know.
Nah. No, not quite. Those are not quite guys.
Kevin Youkilis is on there. He's a Hall of Fame sweater. He sweated more than anybody.
The Greek god of walks.
Greek god of walks. Yeah, I forgot about that famous line.
One guy we haven't talked about is Vlad Guerrero. But to me, he was an automatic. I voted for him last year, his first year on the ballot. I mean, he was a guy. His whole career had the aura of a Hall of Famer to me. And I think he's going to sail in this year. He got 71.7% last year in his first year. I think he'll sail across this year and go in as he should, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean you look at. I was reading the Jaffe stuff on him and looking like at the Jaws ratings and stuff. It doesn't like his WAR and stuff isn't quite as great. His base running, which is really weird, because they celebrate the fact that he's 30 for 30. You know, he had 30-30, two 30-30 seasons, but they also, his base running is really bad at the end, because remember him running at the very end when he couldn't hardly
move? Oh, yeah. It was painful. It was like watching Edgar in his final years.
You wonder what playing on turf did to some of those guys. I mean, Vlad and Larry, I mean, I wrote about it, but Larry Walker, from playing on turf and the way he played all those years in Montreal, that had to take just years off his career.
Yeah, well, Junior, Ken Griffey. Yeah. I mean, he was beat up in the second half of his career because of playing the first half at the Kingdom. You know, it definitely takes a toll, no question.
All right. So it's a few days. You got the mixed religion family. How do you do that in the holidays, anyways?
We just celebrate it all.
You do?
Yeah, we do. Okay. But it's been kind of it's been a weird year, just for a variety of reasons this year. So the holidays have kind of snuck up on us without much preparation or involvement for some health things and some other things. But everything's good. Everything's good now.
Oh, yeah, well, that's good. I mean, you're not going to get anything good. You're not going to get anything good for the holidays. No presents.
Well, I don't know. I haven't really. Haven't even thought too much about it. I'm not a big gift getter. I know my kids are always asking me what do I want. We have like a family. We started a couple years ago what do they call them?
A gift exchange.
Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a website and you're supposed to put your wish list. Oh. And I haven't put anything on there yet because I can't think of anything that I want. So whoever drew me is upset that I haven't helped them out at all. But
I usually just like, as you get older, obviously you can't, you just buy it. Like if you want something, you just buy it. Like for me, I mean, I like shoes. I like sneakers. So, and Larry knows this, I buy a lot of sneakers or jeans, you know, or, you know, whatever, or booze. I mean, that's one good thing you can always get me for Christmas is a bottle of booze. So you got any?
Yeah,
you got any traditions?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Traditions? Not really. No, we're pretty boring when it comes to that. How about you? How about the divishes?
Well, you don't got any favorite foods or anything like that, or you just
you know we We never really went big into the Christmas meal or anything like that. Yeah. We always buy my wife a, well, here's a tradition. It's a small one, but she loves the night before Christmas. So every year we find a new book, of that for her to get it. Like one that's, you know, it's amazing how many different editions of The Night Before Christmas. She's got like 30 of them.
Wow.
And they're all different. Some are pop-up books, some are spoken word. One time, the family each read different verses and recorded it. So, excuse me. So that's about the biggest tradition that we have, I guess.
That's a pretty cool tradition, though.
Yeah.
So I haven't been home for Christmas in quite a while. Part of my job in the off season, like that month of December, usually the Seahawks are really good. And so it's getting close to playoff time, so I have to start helping Bob Condotta out a little bit more. But the Seahawks are actually in Texas, where I volunteered to go because if you guys don't know this, Larry and I both love Fort Worth, Texas, and that's where the Seahawks stay when they play in Dallas. But Larry and I both love Fort Worth, Texas, more than one of our favorite places staying downtown there. And so they're playing there. So I volunteered to go as one of the backup writers. Of course, I didn't get that. So I was a little disappointed. So I decided to fly back to Havre and see my family instead.
Yeah, we divide up the trips, and Matt Calkins has this one for the columnists. So I will be home for Christmas, which is good. I think this year in particular, the two kids who are in college are home for Christmas, and I'd feel bad if I were away. Yeah. So I'm happy to be here.
So our Christmas tradition, we don't have a ton. We used to do a gift exchange, but we stopped doing that because, again, as you get older, you just buy your own stuff, you know. But the one tradition that we do when I am here is we get this, there's this pizza place called Nalifka's, and we order two pizzas, and it used to be my mom, my dad, my sister, but now my sister is doing her own family thing, but so it's me and my mom and dad, and I think some of their friends are coming over, but we order some pizzas, and we have that, and we watch Christmas Vacation every year. Me and my dad, and each year we go back and forth when I'm around, take turns and we buy a bottle of bourbon or whiskey. You know, I prefer rye whiskey, he prefers bourbon, but we go back and forth, and then so we have our pizza, and then we put the movie in, and we sip on bourbon and stuff, and we watch the movie, and then after that we end up playing like games, you know, like card games. You know, my parents play Pinochle, so I know how to play that. Like if there's friends come over, my mom likes Scattergories and all these games where you look like an idiot, you know. So that's what we're gonna do.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, no, it's fun. And look, I'm freezing my ass off here, okay? It's 11 degrees out. I've shoveled or had to use the snowblower 4 times in 2 days. This is not ideal for me. I've turned into a weather wimp since I moved to Western Washington. I can't handle the cold, so I'm staying indoors, and whiskey will help warm my soul, I guess.
Well, I grew up in Southern California, so it's still jarring to me when it gets to be 50 degrees or below. So, you know, if we were to have a ranking of the seasons, winter would be number 4 for me, way at the bottom. I'm not a big Christmas person. I'm not a big winter person. I'm counting down the days till get to go to Arizona for spring training. Actually, I get to go to Arizona for the Fiesta Bowl next Wednesday. So even better, I get to escape the cold for a few days in December, which is a nice bonus.
I am not counting down the days till spring training quite yet. I'll get in that mode, but this is helping motivate me. I don't know. It's weird. And then my mom hasn't started in on the Christmas music yet. Usually that'll start where it's every day, but the Hallmark movie Christmas shows or the Hallmark Christmas movies on the Hallmark channel that are on, it is incessant. She will not turn them off. We have to have an intervention, or I'm going to call their local cable company, which stinks, and they don't have the Pac-12 network, so I can't watch the Grizz versus the Huskies tonight, and tell them to cancel that channel because I can't take it anymore. It's on every channel, everywhere. That's all we
watch.
Yeah,
well, I got to say that I'm with you because my wife watches those.
What is it about
Well, there's two channels. There's two Hallmark Christmas channels. Just devoted to Christmas movies 24 hours a day.
And they're awful every, movies.
And every one of them has the same plot. The woman meets she's dating the douchebag guy, and she meets the nice guy who sweeps her off her feet, but she's got to somehow dump the douchebag, and which she always does by the end of the movie, and lives happily ever after. She finds the Christmas spirit through the new nice guy and ends up with him. So I just wrote a movie. Let's write a Hallmark movie together and make a million, and we can then we can buy anything we want.
Well, I could play the D-bag guy, because that's kind of my default method. So yeah. Well, I'm glad that you're feeling my pain on this. So that's not ideal. And I you'll get something good for Christmas, I'm sure.
Oh, I know I will. They always come through.
Maybe I got you a Christmas present. You're using them right now, headphones.
That's right. Yeah. I appreciate that. Not only do I use them for the podcast, I even use them for interviews now. I've discovered that it's opened up a whole new world for me. I don't have to like cradle the cell phone in my neck and end up with like a sore neck for 3 days. I can put I know people are laughing at me now that I just discovered this, but I did.
This week's episode of Technology with Larry Stone. All right, I'll let you go. Thanks for coming on.
All right, Merry Christmas.
You too. Merry Christmas.
All right, see you.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Extra Innings Podcast here at the Seattle Times. Thanks again to Larry Stone, our columnist, for getting on the phone and talking with me for about 50 minutes on his day off. We always have a lot of fun. We never actually stay on topic. I mean, it's just one digression after another, but it's always fun, Larry and I talking. I think you can kind of tell how good of friends we are and how often we communicate, because it's pretty much back and forth. Thanks to Midnight Salvage Company, the official house band of the Extra Innings Podcast, for the music, as always. I hope you guys all have great Christmas, New Year's, Hanukkah, whatever it is that you guys celebrate. I hope, you guys really enjoy that. All the best to you. And hopefully we will do one before the new year. Maybe we'll do some resolutions, go all cliche. Who knows? Well, I'll try and come up with some ideas. I still have some ideas for some readers that email me about some stuff that we can go over. And I'm still trying to get Dr. Lorena Martin on the show, and maybe even DePoto, but he's got his own podcast, so we'll figure that out. Once again, if you need to get a hold of me, feel free to email me at rdivish@seattletimes.com. Hit me up on Twitter @RyanDivish or on my Facebook page with my big ugly mugshot. So, thanks again for listening. Again, have a good holidays, and we'll talk to you soon.